Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was a high school and university teacher, a psychotherapist, a motivational speaker, and a trainer. He co-created a book that was turned down by 144 publishers before being published in 1993. That book has evolved into 105 titles in 54 languages, and 100 million copies are in print. His name, Jack Canfield, and the book's title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Jack Canfield, who co-created with Mark Victor Hansen, Chicken Soup for the Soul. Jack, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
My pleasure to be with you, Jack.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I was raised primarily in Wheeling, West Virginia, and my mother and father got divorced when I was six. He was a pretty difficult guy, a little abusive, and my mom divorced him and remarried my stepfather, who I mainly remember growing up with. And unfortunately, my mom was an alcoholic, and my dad was a workaholic that drank a lot. And so we were what's often referred to as a dysfunctional family. But there were a lot of good things in the family. I mean, they believed in education, made us do our homework. Kept our noses clean. As we always say, West Virginia, Wheeling, West Virginia was a great town to grow up in, because if you were out of school at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, not supposed to be, someone would say, "Aren't you Jack Canfield's boy? Don't you belong in school?" Today you'd never see that in a big city. So there was good news and bad news, but basically I was the oldest of four children, expected to set a good example, and I think that probably had a positive influence on me.
You began teaching high school in 1967. Can you talk about that, please?
I was a teacher in an all-black inner-city high school in Chicago called Calumet High School, and it was an eye-opening experience for me. I'd come from a middle-class white family and gone to Harvard as an undergraduate on a football scholarship. I wasn't all that smart, but I played football well. And so when I got to Chicago and ended up in an inner-city school, which I was attracted to because it was the time of the Civil Rights Movement, I discovered that my students weren't really that motivated to learn, and that really kind of changed everything for me, where I was wanting to make a difference but realizing that teaching history wasn't really anything they were much interested in. And so I found that the thing they really needed was to learn to feel confident that they could even learn. And that's when I ran into a guy named W. Clement Stone, who was a self-made multimillionaire worth about $600 million at the time. And he had a course called Achievement Motivation Program. How do you motivate people to achieve more? And I took that class and started using those principles in my classroom, teaching motivation, self-esteem, values, goal setting, all the things that we now know are what create successful people. And the kids really started to learn. And then became sought after by the other teachers. What are you doing with those kids? Tell me.
How long were you a high school and college teacher?
I taught a high school for 2 years. And then, as I said, people started asking me to teach other teachers. So I did that for a while. And then I went back to graduate school, where I taught undergraduates while I was working on my graduate degree. And then I taught 1 year at a nearby college. This was in Amherst, Massachusetts. And what really happened for me was that after teaching college, I realized that I was really much more interested in teaching teachers. So I went back to becoming a consultant and traveled around all over the country. I've taught in every one of the 50 states now. At that time, self-esteem.
What is self-esteem, Jack?
Well, Jack, if you love yourself and you feel competent and capable of achieving whatever it is you feel like you desire in life, those are the two main components of self-esteem. It involves trusting yourself, loving yourself, accepting your feelings, knowing that you're a good person, that you're worthy of success. unfortunately, what we find is most people in America, 2 out of 3, have low self-esteem. As I often say in my talks, look to your right, look to your left, one of you is okay. And so 2 out of 3 of us aren't. And so we have to take responsibility as adults to reclaim our self-esteem, to heal what was damaged by parents and by teachers and coaches and siblings and nuns and so forth and all of that. But the idea is that we ultimately are responsible for our self-esteem, and we can learn to rebuild it. It's very, very easy if you know how.
If I don't have self-esteem, how do I get it?
Well, I'd say the main thing you need to do if you don't is you need to find a resource, whether it's a set of audio tapes, I have a couple, whether it's books, there are a number on the market, you can go to any self-help section in the bookstore, and really study it, because it's hard to create something you don't know anything about. It's like trying to learn how to cook without a cookbook. But some of the key principles would be that you would learn to trust your feelings and speak them. Know that it's okay to be angry. I was taught as a boy, it's not okay to cry. It makes you a sissy or a wuss. Women aren't supposed to get angry. It makes them the B word. And so the reality is that we've all learned to repress parts of ourselves. The other thing is most of us never learn to set goals. When you achieve goals, it increases your self-confidence and your self-esteem. When you take a risk and you survive, it increases your self-confidence. And so taking little baby steps in the direction of that which you want, that which you want to do, that which you want to say, and that which you want to become. And if you'll just set little tiny goals each day and achieve them, that's going to build the confidence side. And if you learn to share your feelings, surround yourself with positive people and friends, and stop hanging out with negative people, and there's a lot of them out there, I call them psychic vampires, set feeling of you've spent time with them and you feel drained as opposed to uplifted. So those are just a couple of the things, but I did put together a cassette album called Maximum Confidence, and I have another one called Self-Esteem and Peak Performance, and each one of them has 6 hours of information, much more than we can go into on this show.
We're talking to Jack Canfield, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Jack Canfield. Jack, how did the book Chicken Soup for the Soul ever come to be?
Well, you know, Jack, it really started back when I was a high school teacher and I was teaching these inner city kids, and I noticed that whenever I would tell them a story, I'd have their total attention. And whenever I would talk concepts and try to teach history and give them lectures, you know, they'd become fidgety and look out the window. So I began to really realize the power of stories. And, you know, all the great teachers, Muhammad, Jesus, Buddha, they all taught with stories. And so I started collecting stories that were of kids who had left the ghetto and become successful, like a lot of people that you've had on your show. And so when I would share these stories, the kids would be rapt. And so I ended up with folders full of these stories. And then as I started doing workshops for teachers, I had to find other stories about, you know, people overcoming obstacles and going for their dreams and bringing more love into their classroom and so forth. And I had folders full of those. And then when I started doing corporate work, you know, I had stories of people going for their dreams. I know you've had Tom Monahan on your show and people like that. And so I would gather these stories and I would share them with the people. And it was about a two-month period where people would come up and say, that story about the puppy, that story about the Girl Scout, that story about the guy that started his own business, is that in a book anywhere? And I'd always have to say no. And I was coming home on a plane from Boston back to L.A. where I lived at the time. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, is telling you put these stories in a book. So on that plane flight, I listed down all the stories I knew, and there were about 68 of them. And so I started to, write them up. And I gave myself the goal of trying to write 2 stories a week. You know, so I had about three days to write the story. And I'd been telling these stories for years, so it wasn't that difficult. And that was the beginning of Chicken Soup for the Soul.
How did you and Mark Victor Hansen become partners?
Well, as I said, I had about 68 stories, and I was about halfway through the book, and Mark and I had breakfast, and we'd been friends for about 17 years at that time. I met him at a conference where he was running a workshop called How to Outperform Yourself, and the promise was double your income and triple your time off in 2 years or less. And, boy, I needed to do that, so I went to his seminar. And then he came to my afternoon seminar, and we went out for dinner and been friends ever since. But he said to me, what are you doing these days? I said, well, I'm writing this book. He said, what's it about? I said, well, it's all these motivational and inspirational stories. And he said, well, I'd like to write that with you. I said, Mark, it's half done. That's like asking James Michener, after he's finished half of the book Hawaii, to finish it with him and be a co-author. I said, why would I let you do that? He said, well, you've only got 68. You should have 101. I said, why should I have 101? He said, well, when I was in India in the Peace Corps, I learned that's a spiritual number. It means completion. And I've got at least 33 stories we could add. And anyway, he convinced me we did it, and it's been a wonderful partnership ever since.
How did you come up with the name Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Well, you know, we had the book pretty much finished. We wanted to take it to New York to, you know, sell it with an agent and go to all the publishers, and we didn't have a title. So I said to Mark, look, you and I are both meditators and prayers, so why don't we go inside and just ask God for a title? And so we each have our own different ways of meditating and praying, but I do it. I just ask the question, then I sit and wait for an answer. Sometimes the answer comes as something I can hear. Sometimes it's like words I see or a picture. And about Wednesday of that week, I saw a hand that just wrote chicken soup on a chalkboard. And I said, what does chicken soup have to do with our book? And the hand answered, well, when you were sick, your grandmother gave you chicken soup. I said, but this is not a book about sick people. It said, oh, yes, it is. It's about people's spirits are sick. They're living in resignation and fear and hopelessness. And this was right in the middle of the first Gulf War. There was a big recession going on. I'm sure it was felt in Detroit in the auto industry. People weren't buying cars. They were holding on to their discretionary income. And so that morphed from chicken soup for the spirit to chicken soup for the soul in about, oh, I'd say a minute and a half. And I got out of meditation, told my wife, she got goosebumps. I called Mark, he got goosebumps. I called my agent, he got goosebumps. And as you know the story, we went to New York and nobody got goosebumps.
144 straight times, publishers rejected you. How did you get the courage to keep going?
Well, you know, we went to New York with our agent, and we had 21 meetings, 7 a day for 3 days with all the big publishers like Simon & Schuster and HarperCollins and so forth. And they all said, no, stupid title. Nobody reads short stories. There's no sex. There's no violence. It's not edgy, hip, urbane. And we said, okay. And so our agent gave us the book back. He said, I can't sell it, guys. It's yours. So we literally kept writing out, you know, sending out copies, and we got rejected by about 40 more publishers. And then we went to the American Booksellers Association convention. We went booth to booth to booth for 3 days. There were over 4,000 publishers there. And, you know, what kept us going was that we believed in the material. Mark and I were giving speeches. We were getting standing ovations. And there's something about New York and San Francisco on the two coasts. They kind of miss what's going on in the middle of the country. They don't understand the real heart of the heartland, if you will. And we knew that these stories were inspirational, motivational. So we would have self-published if we had to. And I think what kept us going was we had passion for the project. We had an inner belief. It was kind of like we were divinely obsessed. You know, it was almost like it was a charge from God to go and do this book. And so, you know, when you're given those kind of directions, you follow them.
After 144 rejections, when somebody finally said, I'll do it, what did you do?
I think we jumped up and down. We were pretty excited. And the problem was, though, it was a little tiny publisher down in Florida that hardly anyone had ever heard of. And we asked if we were going to get an advance. He said no. We said, how many copies do you think we'll sell? He said 20,000. Well, we said, we want to sell 1.5 million in 1.5 years. And I don't know if you've ever shared a dream you had, Jack, with someone, and they laughed out loud at you. But that's what our publisher did. He laughed out loud. And we said, well, you wait. Well, 1.5 years later, we had sold 1.3 million copies. So we didn't hit our goal perfectly, but we certainly blew the publishing world away and blew our publisher away as well.
It's amazing how many of my guests were told at some point or many times in their lives they couldn't do this or they couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. Why do a few people do it and far too many people don't do it?
I think, you know, some of us just believe in our dreams. And, you know, whether you're Walt Disney or Michael Dell or Bill Gates, who dropped out of college to do the computer thing. You know, it's if you just have this knowledge, this knowing in your heart that who you are is good and what you know is valid, and that goes back to the self-esteem issue, which I had worked on for years in my life. There's just something when you're aligned with your purpose. You know, the third chapter of my new book, The Success Principles, is be clear why you're here. Know what your purpose is. And most people don't. And there's process in there to help people get in touch with it. Once you know your purpose, then you just go for it. You know, Martin Luther King was clear about his purpose. Mandela, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, they knew why they were here. And once you know that, you know, you're willing to be in prison, to risk rejection, to go to jail, to go through poverty, to bankruptcy, whatever it takes, because you know that you're doing what you're supposed to do.
I recently read this from Michael Jordan. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. On 26 occasions, I've been entrusted to take the game-winning shot, and I missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that's precisely why I succeed. Many people feel that not having immediate success is actually a blessing. Do you agree?
I do, because what it does is it builds character. As they say, it builds perseverance, it builds patience. You have to develop and hone qualities in yourself, courage and discipline that you might not if you were just handed life on a silver spoon. I had a roommate once when I was just out of graduate school whose father owned a bank. He got $6,000 a month as a $6,000 a month as a kind of trust fund baby. And this person never developed inner strength. You know, they never had to. And so I think the real purpose in life is not the goodies you get, the money, the big house, the car, but who you become in the process of achieving your goals. And as my mentor, W. Clement Stone, said, I want you to set a goal that's big enough that in the process of becoming it, you're going to grow into someone worth being. And I think that's a really important aspect of goal setting and the life's journey.
We're talking to Jack Canfield, and when we come back, we'll ask him how it is he's come up with and selected thousands of stories for these 100-plus titles. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Jack Canfield. Jack, Chicken Soup of the Soul has now turned into 105 titles, close to 10,000 stories. How have you selected and found all these stories?
Well, as we always say, the first 30 for a book are easy because there's just enough out there, but the rest you got to really work for. But like if we do Chicken Soup for the Sports Fan Soul, we'll put a call out to all the sports writers in America. We'll go online to sports writing websites and so forth, and we'll read lots of magazines and books, and we, you know, we'll ask all of our writers. We now have about 1,000 writers who've contributed stories. You know, do you have a sports story? The same thing with grandparents or parenting, et cetera. And we'll go to experts in the field, psychologists and so forth, and ask stories about their own clients. And, you know, what I've discovered is everybody has a story. I mean, you've got a show where people are sharing their life's journey, and everybody has a story. And the problem is no one ever asked people to share it. And so we kind of provided an opportunity for people to share these stories. And, you know, one of the challenging things with some of our books, like our teenage soul books, because every teenager has to write papers for school and so forth, we'll get 20,000 stories for one book. And then we'll read them and have kids read them and so forth and narrow it down to about 200. And then we pick a panel of about 40 people, black, white, urban, rural, suburban, et cetera, north, south, east, west, and have them read the stories and grade them on a scale of 1 to 10. And the closer the average score is to 10, those are the ones that we end up putting in the book because they have the greatest appeal to the people reading them.
You mentioned this earlier. Stories are great teachers. Why are people so inspired by stories?
I think a story is a true experience of another human being. And when a story is something that encourages us because people took a risk and won, people persevered and finally got the goal. You know, you mentioned Michael Jordan missing 9,000 shots but still being the league scorer, the MVP. And so these stories about love and compassion and courage and overcoming obstacles and healing from illnesses, they inspire people to know that it's possible. And we all want models of people who've done it so that we know it's possible for us. And when we have that, then we are literally, if the word inspired means to be filled with spirit, it's like the spirit of God. To be enthusiastic comes from the root word theos, to be filled with God, the root word of theology. So basically, I think stories are true experiences that people know if they can do it, then I can do it. And they remind us of how magnificent we really are as human beings, because unfortunately the news constantly focuses on what's wrong and what's not working. People need an antidote to the news.
We're talking to Jack Canfield, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Jack Canfield. Jack, can you share with us two or three of your favorite stories?
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is kind of a cute, funny one. A mother takes her daughter to the doctor, and the doctor's a very child-friendly doctor, and she's looking down her ear with an otoscope, and she says, are we going to see Big Bird in there? And the girl says, no. And then she looks down her throat with a tongue depressor and says, are we going to see the Cookie Monster in there? And she says, no. Then she has a stethoscope on her heart. She says, are we going to hear Barney in there? The little girl says, oh, no, the Lord's in my heart. Barney's on my underpants. It's a cute story. One of my favorite stories is about a guy named Roger Crawford, who is a man who was born with one finger on his right hand and a finger and a thumb on his left hand. His left leg was amputated from the knee down. He had a disease called ectodactylism when he was born. All four of his extremities were malformed. And yet he wanted to be normal like everybody else, and he had goals, and one of his goals was to play tennis like his father. And if anyone listening has ever played tennis, you know that they always say you have to have a nice firm grip. Well, how do you grip a tennis racket with one finger on your hand? Well, he actually duct taped the racket to his arm and for 2 years played that way until Wilson came out with a fiberglass racket where he could literally put his finger in a little groove at the bottom of the head of the racket and wedge it back with his other hand. And he went on to become captain of his high school tennis team and later captain of his college team, and went on to become a professional tennis instructor. And, you know, when you hear a story like that and you realize most of us with three fingers would say, I can't play tennis, I can't play the piano, I can't do anything with my life, we'd feel sorry for ourselves. And instead, he illustrated an important success principle, which was whatever cards you're dealt, you have to learn to play them, and it's just a problem to be solved. It's not something to whine about. It's something to look for solutions for. And today he's a motivational speaker, and he gets about $20,000 a talk.
Youth are our future, and therefore teachers are of utmost importance to us. Mm-hmm. What advice do you give to teachers?
Well, I think teachers need several things to know. Number one, most of what you needed to know, they didn't teach you in graduate school or undergraduate school. And you have to become a lifelong learner and learn more about how to deal with kids. And I think the biggest problem in education is we're not dealing with the affective or the emotional side of children. We're not teaching them how to clarify their values. We're not teaching them ethics. We're not teaching them how to set goals. We're not teaching them how to clarify their purpose. We're not teaching them communication skills. All the things that produce the bad stuff in life, like divorces and depression, we're not giving kids skills to deal with those things. And if you learn the kind of things what I call holistic education or life skills education, emotional literacy, et cetera, then you don't have these problems. Dropouts stop, pregnancy stop, drug abuse stops. We need to teach kids how to feel joy without drugs and alcohol, but nobody's doing that. And so we focus on, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, but I tell teachers nobody got divorced because they didn't memorize the seven causes of the Civil War. Now, it's useful to know that, but it's not as critical as knowing how to communicate, how to share your feelings, how to resolve conflicts without violence, etc. So I think that teachers need to become skilled life coaches and counselors, and they need to learn how to do that in a group way. And I think the other thing I would just recommend that we found really valuable is if you start reading Chicken Soup for the Soul stories to your kids, especially the ones from the teens and preteens and kids' books, but also Pet Lovers, Sport Lovers, all those, we find the kids start paying attention more, they get inspired, and they become much more easy to teach and more successful just from that one intervention.
In today's world, the only constant is change. Yet so many of us fear change. What do you say to people who fear change?
Well, the only thing that's constant is change. And I ask people to look back to a time when you thought change was going to kill you, and in fact, it didn't. And to just then bring that forward to the present moment and realize it's not going to do it again. I mean, I grew up in West Virginia where the coal industry was, you know, the main source of income for a lot of people. And when we started, you know, higher importing of oil and gas heat and electric heat and all that, a lot of coal mines went out of business. And people had to retool. And at first what happens is people moan about how bad it is and life isn't fair and so on and so forth. But the fact is, change just is. I mean, you're in Detroit. We now have the Chinese manufacturing automobiles. They're going to do a lot more damage than the Japanese ever did. And so the reality is, it's changing. Now, I teach a formula called E plus R equals O. There's events plus how you respond to them equals the outcomes you get. So if the event is there's a downturn in the auto industry and you're in that industry and all you do is to moan about it, then what happens is you're not going to have an outcome that's good. But if you decide to go back to school, get some new job training, perhaps you might even have to move where the jobs are. You might have to maybe figure out how to sell network marketing products. Maybe you have to go back to community college. Maybe you need to learn a language. You know, I was working with a woman down in Florida, and she was 65 and said she'd never gone for her dream. And I said, what would it take? She said, 4 years of college, but I'll be 69 by then. And I said, well, you know, 4 years from now, you're going to be 69 whether you go back to college or not. And if you don't go back to college, when you're 69, you're going to be right where you are now. But if you do go back, you have a shot. And it's tough to go back to school or to get new training or to move your family or do whatever you have to do to survive. But that's just what's required of us.
If we have a listener who's 45, 50 years old, hasn't been to school in 30-plus years, and he's sitting here thinking, I can't go back to school, I can't learn anymore, what do you say to him?
Well, I can't is the worst phrase in the English language, because you can actually test yourself with this. You put your arm out to the side and say, I can, and then you say anything after I can, play the piano. Even if you can't, your arm will be strong. Put your arm out there and have someone push down on it, and then say, I can't play the piano, your arm will go instantly down. Every time you say, I can't, it weakens your entire neuromuscular system and puts you in a trance. Human beings can do anything. I work with immigrants all the time in L.A. who literally got up and left Bosnia and Croatia and Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, and they brought their family to a whole other country, had to learn a new language, had to go to school. Maybe they drove a cab while they were going to school at night, but they did it. And if they can do it, you can do it.
What's the greatest characteristic which you possess that has led to your personal success?
Well, I think it's right along the lines of what we've been talking about, Jack. It's that willingness to do whatever it takes. A friend of mine has a quote. He says, you get to where you're going by going where you have to go, meaning you just do whatever you have to do to get there, and, you know, within the law and all that. And, you know, perseverance, belief that it's possible. I think a positive expectation. See, if you think it's going to turn out bad, guess what? It's going to. Henry Ford in your city said, if you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right. Because if you think you can, you'll try. And if you think you can't, you won't try. And if you don't try, it's guaranteed you're not going to get there. We talked about Michael Jordan missing 9,000 shots. Wayne Gretzky, the great hockey player, said you miss every shot you don't take. I mean, it's a real important thing. You got to take your shot. You know, not every shot's going to work. But you got to keep plugging away until you find the one that does. I mean, I wrote a lot of books that never got published. It took us 14 months before our book hit the bestseller list, Chicken Soup for the Soul. But we did five things every day, what we call the rule of five. If you're out of work, do five job interviews, right? Send out five resumes, call five friends, go to five different places of employment, ask for a job, even if it's the local pizza place. There's five things you can do every day, and if you keep doing them, law of probability says the more things you try, the more likely one of them will work.
In today's world, you have to keep learning while you're earning. And you've said that a commitment to lifelong learning is utterly essential to success in life.
That's right. It goes back to what we said earlier. You know, the people that keep learning have new skills. They learn computer skills. They learn a language. They learn how to new communication skills so they can talk to people more effectively. They learn marketing skills, sales skills, public speaking skills. The more skills you have and the more information, we live in the information age, so the more information you have, the more you have something to share with others. You know, if I learn to paint, then I can sell myself as a painter. If I learn to play the piano, I can play in a piano bar. So it's constant. And the other thing we know is if you don't learn, your brain atrophies. I mean, I'm 62, and at the age of 59, I started learning to play the piano. Just bought a little keyboard, you know, a couple $100 on a stand, and started taking lessons with my 11-year-old daughter because I was jealous she was doing it. And the reality is I've gotten pretty good at it in 2.5 years, but I had to go and go through that very awkward stage. See, as we get older, we're afraid of looking bad, being awkward, not knowing how to do it perfectly because we think we should. It's like learning to drive a car when you're 55. It's a challenge, but you can do it.
We're talking to Jack Canfield. When we come back, we'll ask him about a new book, The Success Principles. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Jack Canfield. Jack, The Success Principles. Can you talk about that book?
Well, you know, it's the last book I wrote, and I took a year and a half to write it. It was my labor of love, my opus magnus, as they say. And it's a big book. It's got 64 principles of success in it, but it's easy to read. There are no chapters more than 5 or 6 pages long, and you could do one a day, and in 2 months you'd have read through the book. And I put in all these principles because as I looked over my life, and I interviewed over 55 highly successful people, General Wesley Clark, who used to be the head of NATO, Pat Williams, who's the vice president of the Orlando Magic basketball team, the guy who runs REMAX, the big real estate agency, Dave Liniger, and on and on and on, Nashville, you know, songwriters that have become millionaires, et cetera. And looking at what are the principles that are universal, that if you know them, they'll make your life work. And one of the people I interviewed was a young black man who is now an Alabama State chess champion. And he said to me, you know, Jack, he said, success is like knowing the combination to a lock. He said, if you know the combination to a combination lock, it doesn't matter if you're 55 and you're an auto worker in Detroit, or if you're 32 and you're a Harvard professor in Cambridge, Massachusetts, if you're a man or a woman, black or white, live in the city, live in the suburbs, the lock has to open. And unfortunately, most people running around have never learned the numbers to the combination to the lock called success. And so it was my labor of love after having read 3,000 books on the subject, having taken hundreds of seminars and listened to audio tapes ad nauseum, to figure out what is the core essential stuff that you need to know. And that's what I put in this book.
Can you talk about goal setting?
Well, it's one of the most important things. I devote 2 whole chapters to it in the book, that people without goals end up working for people who do have them. Research shows that if you just simply write down specific, measurable goals of things you want to accomplish, I want to lose 15 pounds by the end of the year, I want to add one room onto my house, I want to have my net worth increased by $20,000, whatever it is, that those things you write down, you're 200% more likely to achieve them if you just write them down, put them in a drawer, and never look at them again. The mere act of writing them down kind of says to your subconscious mind, I've made a decision, I want this. If you were to write it down and review them every day and spend a few minutes thinking about what's one next step I could take in each of these categories, your chances of achieving your goals are 500% higher than people who don't do that. So goal setting is like having a destination. It'd be like going out in a sailboat from the harbor in San Francisco, not having any idea where you were going. You'd have no way to know how to steer or how to, you know, trim the sails. And so goals are critical to success. Only 3% of Americans have measurable goals. We now know that only 10% of Americans are ever exposed to the concept of goal setting in their education. So if you want to be in that top 10%, you have to be a goal setter.
If we set our goals too big, aren't we setting ourselves up for failure?
Not necessarily. I mean, you can set them big in the sense that maybe you want to be a millionaire. You're probably not going to achieve that in the next 30 days. There is a record now where someone took a course called How to Become a Millionaire, and 14 days later was one, and they went in with a $100,000 net worth. I think they were a little lucky. They found a property that was distressed. They flipped it over and turned it into a nursing home and was able to sell it for $1 million profit within, you know, 14 days. But generally, I find that what I teach people is I can guarantee if you use the principles in my book, The Success Principles, you can double your income and double your time off in 3 years or less. I don't care how much or how little you're making. That's easily doable. We have tens of thousands of people who've read my book in the last 2 years who've become millionaires. They've doubled their practice in dentistry. They've gotten jobs when they didn't have one. One woman said she gave the book to her brother. He had been unemployed for 5 years. He was depressed. He read the book. 2 weeks later, he went for his first job interview, and within a month, he had a job. So we know that the principles work if you work the principles. It doesn't matter how big the goal is. We put a man on the moon, you know, when we didn't know how to do that. We got rid of polio. I mean, you can do anything if you set your mind to it.
I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. Will we ever win the World Series?
You will. Look what the Boston Red Sox did.
What's your life's mission?
My life's mission is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. Let me unpack that. I inspire people with the chicken soup stories. I empower them with the tools, like in my books, The Success Principles and Dare to Win and The Power of Focus. And I also run workshops. People can find out about it at my website, which we can give out later. And it's the reason I do it, I want them to live their highest vision, their dreams, not mine, not what your parents said, not what your, you know, wife told you you should do, but what you want to do. And to do that in the context of love and joy, so nobody gets hurt, everybody has fun.
People who know you really well, Jack, say you're a coach. What makes a great coach?
I think a great coach should be someone who's walking the talk, who's been there themselves, who knows how to produce results in whatever area of life they're coaching. I mean, we have parent coaches, executive coaches, life coaches, sports coaches. I tend to be what I call a success coach, and I am successful. You know, my average income is $4 to $6 million a year, and this is from a kid who grew up in a house where my dad made $8,000 a year. You know, it's eight, not 80. And so if I can come from that in West Virginia and do what I've done, and I graduated from the half of the class that made the top half possible, so it's not like I have the great brain power. I just have applied what I have. And a good coach should be a good listener. They should be someone who is confrontive enough to not let you get by with your BS, but loving enough not to push you too fast or too hard so that you freeze up or get too scared.
As I've read the self-help books, one thing they all talk about is visualization. Can you talk about visualization?
One of the most powerful tools on the planet, and it's a crime that it's not taught more. A friend of mine went into a school system in New Orleans where the kids, they had an 84% dropout rate. That means 84% of the kids never graduated from high school. He took these kids on a bus out to Tulane University, had them spend a day walking around with college kids, going to classes, getting a vision of what it looked like to go to college, had them come back and had them visualize every day for the next 3 to 4 years being a college student, graduating, getting at least a B average, etc. And he said he would help get them funding for their education if they would get a B average of a 96% attendance rate. Within 4 years, that dropout rate switched from 84% to 16%. He totally reversed it. And it was all because they visualized the outcome they wanted to have. I could tell you 100 stories about the importance of that. And so, listeners, what you want to do is whatever your goals are, whether it's be thinner, be richer, have a better relationship, win sports, close your eyes every day and visualize the outcome for a few minutes. See yourself in that car and then feel the feelings you'd have if you'd won that game, won that award, had the car, house, dream boat, whatever it was that you wanted in your life. And those feelings literally, and the image programs the unconscious mind to come up with solutions. And also, believe it or not, actually attracts people into your life that will help you achieve your goals, because we now know that every thought you think is like an email out to the universe asking other people to come and play with you, because what we now know from research done with astronauts, our thoughts can travel a minimum of 250,000 miles without any kind of electronic amplification.
How can our listeners learn more about your books, seminars, etc.?
Very easily. They can go to my website. It's Jack, J-A-C-K, Canfield, C-A-N-F-I-E-L-D, there's no spaces, jackcanfield.com. And all the chicken soup books, my books, my tapes, and programs on success principles, and self-esteem, maximum confidence are all there. And we also have a summer workshop people can attend.
What role has faith played in your life, Jack?
A huge role, because it gives you the sense of positive expectation. You trust that the God, the universe, source, however you want to refer to it, depending on your religious background, is going to be there for you. And that if, you know, it says put your trust in me. You know, have faith. Those with the faith the size of a mustard seed. All those great biblical quotes and quotes from Buddhism and Hinduism and all the different religions all talk about the importance of believing that there's a higher power that's on your side. And if you have faith in yourself, faith in the processes that you're learning, faith in the books you read, and faith in God, faith in your fellow man, life gets to be very, very exciting, and it gets easier.
In the last minute, what advice would you give our young listeners tonight?
Same advice I give anyone any age. You just simply have to decide what you want, believe you can get it, find someone who's already done it, figure out what they did, either from a book, an interview, take their seminar, go work for them, whatever, and then set about doing it. And trust that if you persevere long enough and you have a conscious intention and you visualize your goals and you respond to feedback and you stay around positive people, that, as you say, anything is possible.
Jack Canfield, from the millions of lives that you've touched in these past many, many years, thanks a million. Please keep it up.
I appreciate the opportunity to share with your listeners, and you keep up what you're doing because it's very valuable.
Please tune in next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohn.